for Bill, I'll speak a little sex subject. Otherwise, I'll do it.
I'll leave it to you.
Start your day, the Torreway, Northwest London. Monday, 13th December, 9th Teves. Rabbi Ilan Halberstadt, Reflections, Varav Moshe Shapiro, Zatzal. This week's Torreway is sponsored by Ilui Shein, Rapor Shleimo, Shefa Brocha Vatzlocha, and Mechoma Bas Chaba Fagel.
Okay, Rabbi Isai, good morning.
Good morning.
And the 8th, 9th, and 10th of Teves, of course, we know, are the Shleishi Yemei Choshech Sheyod El Olam. And we'll speak about that shortly. But I wanted to use this opportunity. The 10th of Teves, this year is going to be the 5th Yotzeit of Moshe Shapiro Zatzal. It was Nifta on Asor B'Teves, as actually going from the 9th into the 10th. And it was actually, I always felt, in a funny way, appropriate that if any day of the year for him to be Nifter, it would be Asor B'Teves. Because Moshe used to speak about every year, on the 8th, 9th and 10th of Teves, he always spoke about the 3 days of darkness that descended upon the world. And he explained that we have, Chazal tell us, that on the 8th of Teves, that the Torah was translated into Greek, yeah. And that was a day of Churban. And to us, we think, well, what's the big deal? You know, why is that? That's a day of Churban. Well, what's the big inyan of it being translated? That was on the 8th. On the 9th, we're told actually that Ezra HaSofer died, and on the 10th, Yerushalayim came under siege. And therefore, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of Teves are the 3 days of darkness, Yod El Olam. And Moshe would explain how they're actually one and the same thing, even though these are different things, but nonetheless, actually they're one and the same idea. And that is because the great tragedy of the Torah being translated into Greek is the great tragedy of not appreciating that Torah is Etzem Hadavar. Torah is Lashon HaKodesh. As we all know, those who have a little bit of experience, if you learn something in Lashon HaKodesh and you learn the translation, it's not just slightly different. It's worlds apart. The Lashon HaKodesh is the Lashon which is the actual description of reality itself. It's not necessarily like another language that Ram describes the beginning of the Dorim. You have a Shulchan, a table. There's nothing table-ish about a table. We call it a table, because that's just convenient. That's how we speak. And in every language, it's simply just a language, a handle to be able to describe something. But in Lashon HaKodesh, it's the Davar Sheba Etzem. That means to say, if you actually understood all the secrets of what a Shin is, a Lamed is, a Ches, and a Nun, you would understand why a Shulchan looks the way it does, and why the Shulchan in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, looked the way it did. And you'd be able to... You'd be a Bezalel. You'd be a higher Bezalel. Now Bezalel knew how to put the letters together, and by reading the letters, it's a scientific method of understanding the Seder HaTorah, you would see the world the way it looks now. But the letters, of course, are the Sheresh HaDvarim. So Lashon HaKodesh is the Dovah Be'etzem, and that's why we know it's so important, so powerful, that even if you don't necessarily understand Lashon HaKodesh, to daven, for example, in Lashon HaKodesh, you can daven in any language. You can't. You can daven in any language, but if you want the real koyach of Tefillah, you want the real koyach of what Chazal put in every word of Shemina Esrei, it's because they understood the meanings of these words. And therefore, to get that koyach is only Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh is the language of Etzem. It's the essence and the root of the matter. And when the Torah is translated into Greek, the reason why it's a tragedy is because it's taken Torah, which has got Shiv and Panim the Torah, and the rest, right? Shiv and Panim the Torah, but we know all the depth upon depth upon depth. That's only to be gained and gleaned from Lashon HaKodesh. You can't get that in another language. Another language is one pun, it's one translation. And therefore, it's a tragedy to take the Torah, which is Ein Sof, so vast, so great, so profound, and reduce it to one language, which is not Lashon HaKodesh. Because Lashon HaKodesh is the ability to capture everything in the letters and the words and everything about it. And therefore, when the Torah is translated, you take a whole world and you shrink it into nothing in comparison. It's a tragedy. When Ezra Seifa died, Ezra Zemalachi, this was the end of Nevuah. Can you imagine the world before the world we have it now? Everybody could be a Navi. That was the aim. There are only 48 Nevi'im that wrote the Doros, but there were millions of Nevi'im that walked the planet. Because the whole purpose of a year was to be able to refine himself, to learn and become better and better, more refined, more spiritual, and then you'd be able to receive. You just had to have the waves, the Nevuah waves were out there, just you had to be on the level to receive them. So every year could be a Navi. Ezra is the last of the Nevi'im. Ezra, Chag Ezra Malachi, he's the last Nevi'im. It's a transition now to a world from Nevuah to post-Nevuah. You've shrunk the world into a completely different place. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu could speak to you directly, you could receive Dvar Hashem. It's a different world than where we are now in this world. And of course, what was the big deal? So therefore it's the same inyan of the world being shrunk into one aspect, having lost this vast connection to the Ein Sof, as it were, which is what Lashon HaKodesh is and what Ezra, transition of Ezra, represented. And what was the whole big deal of the 10th of Teves? 10th of Teves. That they could... Late Sijon Rishonayim. Okay? So what are we fasting for? The fact that the non-Jews could come and lay siege on Yerushalayim, that's the beginning of the end. How could it be? Yerushalayim is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's world. That someone could capture Yerushalayim, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. How could it be? You're right. It shouldn't be. It should be impossible. It should be impossible. It's Hashem's palace, Hashem's place, Hashem's home. If it's possible, it means because it's been reduced to, unfortunately, no longer the Beis HaMikdash that it was supposed to be. No longer the home of HaKadosh Baruch Hu where the Shekhinah is supposed to reside, which of course would be impossible for anybody to come near, touch, or even approach. The ability for them to lay siege, that already means that we've lost it. In other words, the world has been reduced. The Shekhinah has withdrawn to some extent and is now being reduced to the world that we have. So the three tragedies explained in Moshe, 8th, 9th, and 10th, it's all about the world being reduced to its, to what it is nowadays, instead of being this beautiful world which reveals the source and the essence of everything. And the reason why I say it makes so sense, as it were, that Moshe Shapiro Zatzal was niftar on Asura B'Teves, because every year he spoke about it, and I always found it very strange. Parshas Vayigash is like the juiciest parsha you could speak about in terms of, like, you know, he never spoke about Parshas Vayigash on a Thursday night. For years I read that he always, whenever it was Vayigash, it was always before Asura B'Teves. And he always spoke about the 3 days of darkness that went to the world. Kanireh, he felt that that was more important for us to focus on, to understand where we are nowadays. But this was exactly him. He was somebody that always wanted to go to the essence of the matter. And why it's so, unfortunately, fitting that he was niftar on Asura B'Teves is because he had the ability to unlock Chazal and show a whole world which was completely different. You know, sometimes you hear Divrei Torah. A Divrei Torah is a nice geshmaka idea, a sweet gematria, a beautiful insight. You hear, like, very, very beautiful things. And there's many levels to Torah. Pshat, Remez, Drushim, Sof. And sometimes you hear an idea that just goes straight to the heart of the matter and suddenly opens up your eyes to a whole new world. They're all Torah. Everything's Torah. But there's a fundamental difference where you can go straight to the heart of the matter and really hone in on what's the Ikar HaDevarim that suddenly opens up your eyes, and it's a whole new world that you see because of it. It's called the MS. And that's really what we're always trying to get to. And that was with Moshe's Mahalach. In everything that he did, he was a very deep person. And in everything that he did, he looked for the Shoyosh HaDvarim. He looked to do that. He wanted to go to, I mean, the Havdil, $11, if you've got a backache, and you know, you're trying to work out, where's it coming from? It hurts me here, but on the other hand, it still hurts me here, and hurts me there. And a good professional will say, okay, well, size up, they know, wow, how did you know to press me exactly there? And that's exactly it, yes. Like, they can put the finger literally on it, and that's exactly the source. Somebody who's skilled, a chochem, is able to go to the Shoresh HaDvarim. And by the way, so it is in all chochmah. Rav Moshe used to say, chochmah, it's not him actually, the Ramchal says it, in Ramchal says in Derech Hashem, he writes that a person should always look to learn klal, not prat. What does he mean? Learn, don't learn details, learn pathways. If you learn a mahalech, and that's what we do, by the way, we don't just learn, for example, halacha lemaisa. We learn how we get to the halacha lemaisa. What's the pathway? Because if I just tell you, halacha is this, okay, fine. But then if I throw present you a new question, you're going to be lost. But what do I do? But if you know the pathways, then you understand, oh, so this is the Shoyosh HaDvarim, and even if I present you a new case, or whatever, like nobody's ever discussed before, but the Yesodos are the same. So you can go back to those principles. And that's what the Ramchal says with Ul Chochmah, and that is how Rav Moshe conducted his whole life, and how he looked at the world, and how he approached any sugya. I say sugya, I mean sugya in Gemara, sugya in Machshava, sugya in what to do with your life. It's all about going back to the Shoyosh HaDvarim. Go back to the roots. Look for the principles. Now, because he was able to do that, many people were zoicha here, perhaps, to he came many times to England, and he used to do this around the world, but here we used to have chaburas, and people would sit around the table, and would ask different questions. Random questions, what's your question today? One guy would ask about, I don't know, the Chira, another one would ask about Tu Bishvat, another one would ask about the Parsha, and he would be able to give a shir that would actually address all the questions. So how was he able to do that? He said, very simple, because the world, everything, it's like one big tree, as it were, where there's roots, and then the branches off here and branches off here. If you know how to trace it back, you can go back to the kolim, you go back to the principles. And from those principles, you have to know where, and that's the root of all chachma. And that is what he did. He wanted to go to the root of everything. He wanted the davar shebe'etzem. He wanted to do what basically is called Lashon HaKodesh. Why Lashon HaKodesh is so profound? Because Shivim Lashon is how it spreads out. That's how it spreads out. But go back to Lashon HaKodesh, you'll see it's all in Lashon HaKodesh. You just have to know how to find the pathways. And that's exactly how he approached all of Chochmah, all of Torah. And it's something which is very, very important, because everything is important to learn. But if you can go to the Etzem HaDavar, then suddenly your eyes open up. He had this amazing ability, and it's something which, if I can say this, we haven't had for generations. He was proficient in all areas of Torah, in Lomdus, in Halacha. He was an absolute bocky. You know, I had recently somebody stayed at my house now about 2 years ago. Yerushalmi Yid, proper Yerushalmi Yid, and he told me he knew I was close to Rav Moshe, so that's how he got in touch with me. He was here from Nebrak, I think. And he said to me, I never knew, this is unbelievable, I never knew, for years, he said, maybe 10 years, I never knew that Rav Moshe was a big Baal Machshava. Now, anybody who knows Rav Moshe knew, that was like, he was a complete Baki, everyone knew, the Baki in Kabbalah and everything, like on a different darga. Like, I could not believe that this guy didn't know that. How did you learn under Rav Moshe for so many years, and you didn't know that he was a Baki Machshava? So I never knew. He came and he gave shir in the yeshiva, and he was with such unbelievable shirim ba'irim. He said, I was convinced that was, you know, that was his forte. He was an unbelievable London. He was Talmud of the Brisker Rav, and he himself was learned under Gedolei Yisrael, and he was obviously a brilliant person, brilliant. And his Londus was incredibly sharp. This was Shalmi Yid. He didn't know that for years. He learned Rav Moshe, didn't know. And that taught me two amazing things. Number one, posher, that Rav Moshe, his Londus was incredible, but how do you not know? Because Ramesh wouldn't say anything, you know. He was very much a private person. He gave tens of chaburas every week. I think he gave 30 shurim a week. More than 30 shurim a week. And I'm talking about shurim in Taharis, or in Leshem, or in whatever it might be. You're talking about different shurim that he gave over the course of a week. And he gave all these shurim. And but he never, you wouldn't know. Nobody went to one shir. It's very hard for anybody to tell you all the shurim that he gave. He didn't put it, it wasn't like plastered up there and posted, you know, here's what they are. He wasn't like, it was very, very private. You didn't even know about half the chaburas that he gave. This chabura and that chabura. Hardly anybody knows. Only because now we've worked after his patira, we're trying to work hard to gain recordings from here, there, and everywhere, you know. So now we're finding out. But he was a very, very private person. He had an incredible, rich inner world. That means he was so pnimi that even though he was an unbelievable speaker, an orator, he never said an or an in a shir. I heard him for many years. I cannot remember any time that he said, every word was deliberate and chosen. You know, we used to, Thursday night was the public shiur. Thursday night wasn't a shiur. It was a moment. You were talking about close to 300 people. Originally, it was actually not Sameach, then they moved it because it was too, there wasn't enough people. There were too many people, it was packed. It wasn't a room, I meant to say. And people would already get there 45 minutes before the shiur. And by the time the shiur was about to begin, everyone was ready there. And then as he would come in, it was like almost like a hush. He would come in, like, sort of like, head bent down a little bit. Just what, all he was focused on was going straight to the Amud, where he would actually give the shiur. And then he would start the shiur. And it was like a maimed. He would stand there and he would give a shiur, maybe an hour and 10 minutes, 20 minutes, sometimes an hour and 30 minutes, like a. And it was a shiur that catapulted you to a different level. I remember when I first went to the shiur, many years ago, about 25 years ago, David Tugendhat said to me, he was there, and he said to me, don't daven Maariv. There was a Maariv before, he said, no, don't daven Maariv now. Daven Maariv afterwards. Your Maariv afterwards is going to be a different Maariv than the Maariv before. The Kakava. Don't daven Maariv before. By the time you finish the shiur, your Maariv is going to be a different Maariv. It was a good piece of advice. And it was like a moment. He would come in, and there was deliberate pausing. He spoke very, very carefully. And there was a lot of pausing, but it wasn't there to just, oh yeah, let's just hear your information. It was to absorb it. To sit in the shiur and think about it and absorb it. You're in this different world. Someone said, it was a famous story, that he said to Ramosha, he said, oh, one guy met Ramosha once in the street, he said, oh, I listened to your shiurim, and I've got this great thing, I've got voice activator on my recorder, so every time there's a pause, it stops, so I can listen in half the time, because it knocks out all the pauses. So Ramosha told him, you're missing the whole shiur. You're missing the whole shit. Now, it sounds like, you know, a joke, but it was emes. Because Rashi says, already on Vayikra, why are there pauses in the Torah?
Yeah.
Rebach leis boinim. Moshe Rabbeinu needed pauses, rebach leis boinim. Those pauses were there for you to think about it. And you did. You had nowhere to go. You were there in the shiur. You listened to the shiur. And it gave you a chance to absorb ideas. And that is what he wanted you to do. Don't just say, yeah. The worst thing you could say to Moshe, the worst thing would be to say, after a shiur, and I once heard somebody say something similar to him like this, and he was very upset about it. He said something like, can you just give me a quick synopsis of the shiur you just gave? That was like the worst thing you could say to him. That's the whole point of the shiur, when you come, you focus, you absorb, you think about it. Right? Don't give me this 5-minute recap and that's it, you're done. Torah is you've got to give the mechaber the Torah by giving it the time that it takes to absorb deep ideas. And it was a moment. And he was Malchus. He was Malchus because he had this regal ability to say every word clearly. But he also had this stature. And the shiur itself was something that transported you to a whole new level. And what was he trying to do? He was trying to expose you to Etzem Hadavar. Emes, everybody, you know, it's hard to explain what is emes. The Gemara says, "Nikarim divrei ha-emes." Sometimes when you hear an idea, it just makes sense and it's so clear and so profound and so yes. And that is often, sometimes you might repeat to someone else afterwards and you just want it to sound the same. Why is that? Because when you heard it carefully, thought about it, absorbed it. Ah, now it could resonate. Moshe had this amazing ability, and I was saying before, that he had this ability to Mamar Chazal, to open up Mamar Chazal that we haven't seen for Doros. You know, there's some people that are, he just, an Agarita, which looks like difficult to understand and explain, and how on earth is he going to explain this one, he just had this ability to open it up and explain to you how it works. Now, it would take time, and Shea would explain that you say this, but it was like, unbelievable. It was, I've never heard somebody, you know the difficult Gemaras where you think, well, what's Pshat here? And you know what, sometimes nowadays I come across a Gemara and I think, you know, where's the motion now to explain this? We need him to explain this. We have to look some archives and see if we can find. But he opened up Chazal in a way that was exceptional. Of course, he was a Lamdan, and he gave unbelievable shiurim. But in the world of Nistar, which he himself kept Nistar, like in a Thursday night shiur, Rav Moshe was unbelievably proficient in Kabbalah. That doesn't mean he learnt Kabbalah. He understood Kabbalah. That's the difference. But when he spoke, a Thursday night shiur, he never used Kabbalah jargon. Never. He wanted to explain deep sides of Torah, fine, but he wanted to explain Kafir the Parasha. So even when he would talk about things that nowadays it's cool to say spherus, and they would say this, that, and the other, he would say things like, as the Pasuk says, L'cha Hashem HaGedula, V'Gvura, V'Tiferes, V'Mitzah, V'Hoy, like, he was very careful, at least when he gave public shurim, to make sure that it was dressed, he dressed it up for everybody. Those that understood Sodi Sotori, you could hear that he was saying so much more. But that was classic him. You know, I was Zoicha to many, many years. We went for trips around Europe. He had this. He very much wanted to go to different places in Europe, and go back there and learn the Torah of that place. Whether it's Prague, whether it was Padua, okay, whether it was also Krakow, was a whole experience in and of itself. That was very unusual, and Rav Moshe was very perturbed by going to Auschwitz. He actually refused to get off the bus. He heard that they made some sort of shop in the beginning of one of the Auschwitz places. He said, "I'm not getting off the bus." He refused to get off. They made a shop. There's like a, he couldn't handle that. It was. That was too much for him to be able to hear such a thing. He was so sensitive to that type of. He was called kulei machshava, mind. His mind was so brilliant, but at the same time, he had a lathe. And it was an experience just to be around him. You know, if anybody's ever been around Olam Gadol, I think one of the litmus tests of being around Olam Gadol is two things. One, you feel you're in the presence of something different, and two, it doesn't go away the longer you're there. So we went on these trips, you would have thought, okay, day one, you're a bit, you know, nervous, and two, three, four, and five, you'll chill out a bit more. But it was always that reverence, always that awe, all along. And just observing somebody who's great in Torah is so important. You know, he davened Shemoneh Esrei, he would daven absolutely still, he would not shuckle, there was no moving. And he would daven relatively loud. I don't say loud, but if you went near enough, you could hear. And Imamish davened with such an emus. Literally, there was no time, nothing. It was literally ato chonin la'odom. It was slow. It was almost like singing, and it was just keben speaking to the av. And he davened. It was such a profound lesson. How do you teach somebody davening? You can't. It's all pnimi. But when you see somebody who's kolkola, he was never flustered, never in a hurry. I once took him eschatoy ani mazkir. He was here in England, and I had to get him to a mariv. And the only mariv I could find for the time it worked out was mariv and monks. Monks. I've had everyone know it's going to be on time for monks. So I can't place to be on time. So I'm not so good with timekeeping. I try my best, but. I had to pick him up, and I got stuck in traffic, and here and there, and whatever. By the time I get there and pick him up, I'm like, we're pushing the clock here. I see it's like, you know, it's and when you get to Monks, of course, there's no parking either. So by the time I get there, I'm plotting and finished. I picked up the motion, I was there, and it was really, my life really started. I was like, didn't know what to do myself, you know, I was so embarrassed. Like, I'm bringing in, you know, Adam Godel, and I'm bringing him a late to Dublin. I didn't know what to do. I'm into Monks, like, of all places. Like, so I was like, let's go. I didn't say this, but, you know, he was never flustered in a hurry. He walked normally, regal, malchistic. He walked into Marib late, okay. Hey, that was my fault, not his fault. he walked in Marib, he doesn't marry, so often when we come late, we don't know what to do, we get like flustered. Okay, do I do this, do I do that, do I say Ashkivein, or start with it? He just doesn't. Normally, everything was normal. He was very, very centered, right? He was very, very centered. And that's a very important lesson that I learned. I mean, halavai, I could match that. But he had unbelievable control of everything that was going on. I've never seen this before in anybody else, but I'm telling you, I saw this in him. It's a Kelm de Kemida, and his roots actually was from Kelm. He was related to the altar as well. And when somebody came in the room, normal reaction, anybody that comes in the room is you look up, and if the door opens, you look up. He didn't look up, he just carried on. He was straight. If you came over to speak to him, fine. But he didn't have this, you don't realize how much our heads are turning all the time. This is way beyond that. We're not even in control of what we're looking at, because we're all over the place. If someone comes in, okay, you look. One who's come in. It wasn't like that. Everything was calculated. Everything was focused. And again, these are midas that are rare to see nowadays. He was, as we said, his koyach hadibur was exceptional. Koyach hadibur was exceptional. But for the same reason, he also, outside of Torah, he was a man of very few words. He didn't speak. In the shir, he could speak. Just press play, he could go forever. But when it came outside of Torah, he was a man of very, very few words. He loved silence. He loved silence. He loved it. And I used to take him when I was in Israel. I used to drive on a Sunday. I used to drive from one place to the next. It was like a 10-minute journey. And I even rented a car. I didn't tell him. But I used to rent a car on a Sunday just to be able to drive him for a 15-minute drive around the corner. For me, it was worth it. And so there, you would come in, I would get in the car, and I knew I'd prepare a couple of questions, and you would ask a question, and the immediate reaction would be silence. You wouldn't answer. Now, anybody who's a newcomer to Moshe, you wouldn't know what to do yourself. You'd say, did he not hear me? Should I say it again? He doesn't understand. I've stumped him. He doesn't know an answer. Like, which one is it here? And you'd say your question, and I'm telling you, whatever question it was, there would be a silence, there would be a pause. And there'd be a pause. And shortly after that, sometime after that, it felt like a long time, but sometime after that, he would say something. Now, what was very... And why did he do that? I think he did it because everything he wanted it to come with a cheshbon. He wanted it to come from a place that's been thought through. He didn't like at all, especially to Talmidim, he didn't like if he just threw things out. Think. Every question that you asked, there was a silence, and then there was a response. And I'm telling you, he knew exactly what to answer straight away. Everything was meticulous and needs to be thought out. He had a particular love. A love for, it was very interesting, he was very demanding of Talmidim. Don't ask silly questions. Ask things that are thought through. You have to think through your question a number of times before you asked. He wanted you to, demanded you be on a level. But I saw an unbelievable thing. When it came to kids, teenagers who were struggling, he had a particular love for teenagers who were struggling, and for Baal Tshuva, who were just beginning. Of course, Baal Tshuva developed, he then wanted them to step up and become, people of stature himself, but he was particularly soft to teenagers who he could see were struggling, and I saw him many times give brachas to them with an unbelievable arvo. I just have to end because with one story from him about this. It was a Purim. I mean, I could speak for hours here, but it was a Purim. It was amazing, this. And a group of Russian, and there's another thing, by the way, he had an unbelievable, he was so broad that he felt connected with everybody. He had a very serious interest in Russia and France and in England and in America. He was so broad because that's who he was. He saw clearly so. Let me just end with one story. It was Purim. And a group of this Rav came in with a group of his Talmidim, Russian Talmidim, couldn't speak a word of Hebrew. So he, the Rav, brought them in on Purim. I was there. Brought them in on Purim, maybe 15 boys. They looked clearly Russian, clearly not very advanced. Right? And he brought them in, and they were newly trying out as guests on this journey. And the Rav introduced them, and he was translating. The Rav was translating to Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe said, I want you to tell these boys the following message. This is what he said to the Russian boys. He says, I want to give you, he says, a shalom aleichem from your great grandparents. We've been waiting for you all these years, and we're so happy to have you back. That's what he said to these boys. And I was just like, wow. It's tough, as well, if you think about it. These people, who knows where their parents are? But some Zayda somewhere, they would now look down and say, wow. And that's what he said. I want you to tell these boys. It's what he said. Shalom Aleichem. from your great grandparents, who are now so excited that you've come back. It was classic of Moshe. It was just, and he had this ability to open up everything. There's so much more to say, but we've run out of time. But that's the 8th, 9th, and 10th of Teves. The days where, unfortunately, we've lost this connection, where to see the Etzem HaDvorim, and we now shrunk into one little pun, one little aspect, it's a tragedy. So, we've lost the Etzem HaDvorim, but that's what Moshe taught us. He wants you to think about it. Think about the Etzem, try and go to the root of the matter. Understand what Kodesh Baruch Hu wants of you. Look for the MS, look for the reality, and go to the root of and the heart of every matter.
Five years ago.